We should get recording.
Okay, well, let's do that then.
And I got to have a... I didn't say... Oh, there it is. Thanks. I didn't tell you, Freddie, before, but I've got to have a hard out kind of around 9 because I'm doing the golf show today. And by the time we...
Hard out.
You know what I mean, Dan. That's... what is that? Isn't that movie talk?
Yeah, kind of, I suppose. Sure.
Well, all right, whatever. I have to be done.
So a hard out by 9. We got to be done by 9 because you got to do your show because you got
to do another show. Yes.
So it's all about the other show?
No, it's not all about it, Dan. It's not. It's not all about it.
Isn't this the bigger show?
No, much bigger show.
So this is the...
This is much bigger. So, but sometimes that last 10 or 15 minutes is just gobbledygook. It's just gobbledygook. Fred?
Titcock. Stuff
yes,
like titcock.
Exactly. Yeah. That was... Yeah, we might have to miss 10 or 15 minutes of shits and dicks and titcock.
Yeah.
So let's
that's
get...
just to bring it back around. That's
it's a palate cleanser after all the nonsense.
Okay.
Anyway... In and around that time, I'm going to have to pull the plug. Is that a better?
Pulling the plug, that's fine. Sure.
All right.
So have you got something after the other podcast?
Yes, then? I do. Well, no, the other podcast. You know what, Dan?
Yeah?
Fuck. I shouldn't have said anything. I should have just ended the show at 9. I didn't. You know what, Fred? It's like getting in trouble with one of your teachers. Now it's like now I'm being chastised by Mr. Duran.
No, I know. And what we're going through now is taking away from the solid content of the show.
Yeah, right. But you know, there are a lot of days that this conversation would be solid content.
But not today, because it's a big show. It's a
cool
show.
This compared to what's coming, this is just drivel. So, shall we begin?
This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Toronto, from our Brampton facility with a soon-to-be-open pool, and from Peterborough at Lisa's dining room table next to trendy black sticks in a vase. I'm Dan Duran, broadcasting live from the Insert Your Name Here Zoom Theater and brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. And now here are two men who wonder what it would be like to have their own gag order. Being ordered to say stuff that make people gag. Something that's so easy to do, but when you're ordered to do it, it's Humble and Fred.
Yeah, I would say
you want to go Howard or should
I don't know, you know. You go ahead.
How do I frame this? Dan Duran, gag. Yeah, I'm sure he's gagged a few over the years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, is it an order? No, Dan's not like that.
No, it would be a gag
request.
He's
strictly voluntary, but...
Dan would put in a gag request. Although I do like where Dan was going with the fact that there, a lot of the stuff we've said on this show will make people gag. Just a quick programming note. Jeff Merrick, who was scheduled to be with us today, due to some Sportsnet stuff, we will not have Jeff today. We are going to reschedule, or are we going to reschedule? One of those words. How do you say it? Do you say reschedule?
That's what I would say. Yes,
Dan at CBC. Do they say reschedule?
I don't know, but there used to be a CBC pronunciation book of some sort, but I don't know.
Jeff Merrick today.
That's what they'd say on CBC.
Whatever's going on today was not going to be Jeff Merrick. So tomorrow we have scheduled this Trump guy, the pro-Trump guy from the Midwest of the States who's agreed to come on our show. Hopefully he's not scared off by what he's heard. Because we're looking forward to talking to him, having a reasonable conversation about this crazy time we're living in. And so we're going to try and dial back the Trump stuff today, because tomorrow is going to be, you know, a lot of it. And certainly if you're not interested in it, it will be an uninteresting 20 or 25 minutes.
Yes. If I may, on Jeff Merrick, you know, he's got a good little thing going on right now. Every day for 2 hours, you know, on the Fan 590 and on television, I think on Sportsnet 360. He does a two-hour hockey talk show. It's not Leaf intensive. It's hockey, NHL. And he does it from his house. It's pretty cool, all these guys. These, like, I don't want to say major, but television productions now done from guys' houses with one little camera or whatever. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, and you know what Jeff's like. He's sort of the thinking man's sportscaster, and he's got a good thing going on, and he's solid and a good friend of the show, and I'm happy for him.
I happen to, too. I echo all those comments, and I would only add that I tuned in. I can't remember what how I came across it, but I tuned into some of his broadcasts the other day, and I thought, wow, this is just one locked off camera.
Yeah,
and he's staring into it. Pardon me, in his house, Tia.
Yeah, like he lives out in I don't know.
Yeah, but I was going to say
north of Markham or something.
It looks whatever production values you would ever need from something like that. It's just good enough. It's fine.
And And what I was going to talk to him about today, or we were, a question I was going to ask, is he picked the Maple Leafs to beat the Boston Bruins in seven games. I was going to ask him how he arrived at that. May not get the chance now by the time he's back. And he also picked the Florida Panthers to win the Stanley Cup, and that's who I picked to win the Stanley Cup.
Oh,
which would mean
same.
Which means
good.
If the Maple Leafs knocked off the Bruins, they would play Florida in the next round, and that would be ugly. Okay, that's all.
All right.
When you make a prediction like that, is it like educated with you taking into account all his stats and everything else? And
no, he just pulls it out of his asshole.
I do, actually.
Is it based on stats and things? No, he gets his son's dog over and puts a piece of paper down whenever his dog shits.
That's right.
That's how he makes his predictions.
But Howard, tell me you don't, going into a golf tournament, sometimes it's just feel. It's like instinct. It's you know what I mean? You
look, but it's also based on, how they've played recently.
Well, this is what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like you just have a feeling.
Guys, can I tell you a quick story of bashing my fucking self in the head and breaking a window? Or are we mired in this sludge?
It's crazy, because I bashed my head last week, too, but you go ahead.
Well, can I tell my story first?
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing how connected we are.
Fuck. I bashed my head, too.
Well, yeah, but that's every day, Dan.
That's every day.
Every goddamn. They would be, it would be bigger news on the days you don't bash yourself in the head with something. But very briefly, what was your recent bash yourself in the head story?
Well, Dan. Oh, well,
Dan Duran.
Well, the most recent one I remember is hitting that door that's in your studio that you always tell me not to.
Oh, right, the little door.
But Lisa asked me a couple of days ago, there was a little nick on my face somewhere, and she asked me what that was from, and I said, I just don't remember. I couldn't possibly. I hit myself so often. I just didn't know.
I was going to say, we're going to talk concussions later, but definitely Dan Duran has had, more than one. Well, certainly he's had his fucking nose almost chopped off. Okay, so here's the thing. Dan, you saw these. I had them set up in Mexico, but I have these exercise bands I take wherever I go, and you've seen them. They're pretty. You can make them. I work out with them, and you can make them more or less difficult to stretch. You've seen these, Fred. Mm-hmm.
Resistance.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they used to look like springs, and now they're made
now. Now
plastic.
they're just rubber. Mm-hmm. And So I was working out with them yesterday. I do a series of them. They're all golf based. Everything is for golf. And one of the exercise, and anyway, so where I have it anchored, you can anchor it in a door jam, but where I have it anchored here in my house or golf lab, as the kids call it, is I have it anchored inside the closet in between. It's hard to describe, but just go with it. It's anchored in there. And how it's anchored are these foam sort of, there's the size of sort of small, they would be the size of small apples that go, and you wrap those around something, and then it anchors the bands. Just that's how it works. But these little foam things are the anchor points. And so I'm working out yesterday, and I was just about finished. And one of the things I do is I facing the anchor point, I stretch the band, and I go sort of do sort of standing rows. And it was on my last set, and it happened so fast, it was fucking frightening. I go to pull it, and the anchor points come loose and fucking glance off my forehead into the window with a force hard enough to break, there's two panes of glass, to break the pane of glass. So the outer glass still remains intact. But I was so confused. I wasn't sure where the glass came from at first. Because I was thinking, do I have glass in my face? First thing I do is like, have I cut myself? I didn't. But it was just so, it happened so quickly.
Did it shatter out of it or just crack it?
Oh, no, it shattered.
Oh.
Yeah. It shattered the interior pane of a two-pane glass. Anyway, it was very frightening for an old man on his own. Because I was thinking too, you know, it didn't end up really being hurt. It just sort of glanced off my head. Luckily.
But that's major slapstick, because you get two. You get the blow to the head and the broken window. I love that.
Oh, absolutely. But and think about this. The force that was, and these are foam. Like nothing on there was of any kind of bulk. It was just the speed that it went by me, and it just glanced off my head, because if that hits me in the head with that force, I'll be knocked down, Dan. I could have been knocked out.
Wow.
And then I thought, you know, then you start thinking, okay, you know, and then what do I do? Like, I'm, you know, I'm this old man living on his own with a dog, you know, fucking, how long am I laying on the ground bleeding from the head, from the skull? How long does that happen?
You know how you have that video camera, you record yourself to check your form all the time? Was that running? Was that
no, it wasn't.
Is it possible that we could have seen this somehow?
I wish. Fuck, I went. It was just funny. Hey, anyway, you know, that's quickly. That's my bashed in the head. I had to clean up the glass. Wow. At some point, I'm going to have to replace that window.
Is that one of the windows that you replaced already?
No.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Now it's a reason to replace that window.
Yeah, it's just the glass, though. You wouldn't have to replace it all, would you? No.
I don't know. When you're here next week, you can tell me.
You just take it to a hardware store. They'll replace the glass, won't they?
No.
But no?
No. But you may be able to just replace that pane, because it's a sealed unit. They don't do that. If it was just, you know, like a storm window or something, but there's a, you know, a double or triple pane glass.
And I'd like to keep this on the slapstick vein, but I did have some thoughts later. I wasn't traumatized by it. I've been hit in the head before. But I did, you know, at 64, you have thoughts you wouldn't have had at, you know, 44 or whatever. The fact that, you know, if I get injured in this house, when what is the contact point before someone goes, have you heard from, anyone heard from Dad? You know, like, I'm seeing Spencer today, but that's just a coincidence. I mean, what am I laying? I went to Randy's house last night, ex-wife Randy's house, for dinner. So how long before I'm laying there that I go missing, or people have no idea where I am? This is what I thought when I was, like, bashed in the head by the exercise bands.
Well, anything like that can happen. Because sometimes, you know, when I'm upstairs and coming down the stairs from the bedrooms, you know, we have that winding staircase. And sometimes, I don't know, as I get older or something, I seem to be veering over to the thinner part of the steps. It's weird.
Don't make me laugh.
I've been here for like over, I don't know, what, 27 years or something, and never had problem navigating the steps. But lately, ever so often, I have this little sort of hitch or something on the steps. And I think, you know, if I was home alone, I'd go down those steps and Dahl would come home and there I would be at the bottom of the steps.
I love the word veering. I just it made me laugh, because it's like, you just start going over to one side. Well, at least Dahl would come home and you'd be laying down there.
Yeah, but what if she didn't come home for a couple of days? What if she was out in one of her wild binges?
What happened to you? When were you bashed in the head?
Oh, listen, I can't match your story for slapstick. No, I was just out back, and again, pushing 68, and I'm doing this and that, and thinking, oh, fuck, man, I'm getting too old for this. It was getting pool stuff ready, and wasn't watching what I was doing, and between the shed and the deck, there's this 4x4, you know, thing holding up the deck, and I didn't notice it, and bang, smashed my head against it. And I'll tell you, within 3 or 4 minutes, I had a big goose egg. In fact, I called Doll out. There's another thing about where we're at nowadays. She felt the goose egg, and she said, oh, should you have that looked at? And I said, no. Like, how many goose eggs have you had over the years?
Dan Duran. You're asking the wrong guy. His whole head is a goose egg at this point.
She said, are you okay? Should you have that looked at? Because it was quite sizable. It was like an egg. And I said, no. And that was it. And it goes down after a couple of days. But it was just aggravating, and it hurt in the moment. And, you know, I'm at a position now, I should probably pay someone to come and do all this stuff. But part of me wants to do it myself. But I'm going to get injured.
Yeah. Dan, there's no matching Dan. I mean, we could tell the legendary chainsaw story. There's so many stories. But my favorite part about what you said is that it happens so often to you that you can't remember that there's something, there's a scar, a nick, a cut, a scab.
I've thought about this a lot. You know, if I were to ever, my family does not have a big history of hair loss, but if I ever had to lose all my hair, or if I, you know, had to go bald or something like that, I don't know what my head would look like. I think it would be like, I don't know if I'd have to have some sort of cover-up surgery or something like that, because there's so many.
You know what his head would look like? His head would look like Jerry Cheever's mask.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a reference you'd get, Dan, but it just would be just a series of potential stitches and scars.
Maybe this is a good time to launch into that other story, because I would say when Dan dies, his family should let, you know, science examine his brain, and it might explain some of his odd behavior.
Oh, absolutely. But not just his brain.
You know what I mean?
I mean, if you're once science gets a hold of Dan, let's be serious. Yeah, they might be examining his brain, but they're going to open up the bottom sheet and say, what do we have here?
Hey, I just looked it up on Amazon. So you can get a Daytek strobe siren panic alarm button, siren alarm with light for home carrying loud outdoor SOS alert.
Yeah, I need that.
So you just carry it around. There's a bunch of little buttons. So if you lose one, you can gun one all over the place.
You know, or if I, you know, Dan, you could get a cheaper version. You could get like a walkie-talkie around your neck and just have to set. Lisa has the other receiver, and all you hear is help, help, help. Fred, do you not think? Okay, we're going to get into that brain thing, but you don't think that when science is doing the autopsy on Dan, that they're going to open up his brain, but they're also going to look down at the little brain?
Oh, of course.
They're going to be like, what do we have here, Smithers?
Yeah. This is odd. This is out of balance. My God, look at this.
Well, maybe that's why he keeps clanging into things. He's got the balances all fucked up with his center of gravity.
This is it. This is it. That's right. He keeps veering. There's that word again. He keeps veering off course of the weight.
Yeah, in his case, he's listing. He's just listing to one side. The story that you were going to talk about has to do with O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. O.J. dies last week, or was it last week? The week
couple
before,
weeks ago.
Matter. 76 years old. And, you know, the guy was a professional football player, a damn good one. But again, he played in an era where the helmets aren't what they are today. Anyway, when he died, I guess some medical center in Los Angeles approached the family and said, could we examine his brain? Because he played professional football and, you know, let's be honest, he led, talk about an odd life, could we examine the brain to see if there was maybe any damage from his football playing days? And the family declined. And they just had him cremated. They said no. And I'm thinking, what a wasted opportunity. Seriously, because, you know, football players generally, it's good to examine their brains because it's been startling how many guys, you know, in retrospect, have been injured. playing the sport and really didn't know it until after they were dead. Well, they wouldn't know it, but, you know, their families wouldn't know it until after they were dead. But, you know, this even for the family, this could explain, they could come out and say, you know, this might explain some of his behavior. I mean, right down to, you know, getting in all these rages and domestic abuse and ultimately murdering somebody. But they declined.
Why do you think that is?
They're probably because they're just so done with it all. You know, they just wanted to cremate him, bury him, and just let the legacy be what it is. I don't know.
I have a theory.
What's the theory?
Well, he wouldn't be the first football player to have whatever, some kind of swelling or trauma that would explain, you know, a lot of, Dan, you may not be aware, but a lot of football players from OJ's era have sadly committed suicide because of the, I don't know what the term is, it's not PTSD, but it's a syndrome.
CTE.
Thank you. It's concussion related emotional distress that leads them
sadly. A lot of research has gone into new helmets and stuff.
Right, but yes. from that era. But hey, listen, even from this era, but especially from that time, a lot of these guys, when they get older, can't control themselves, fall into depression, and sadly kill themselves. The reason the family may not have wanted OJ's brain to be exposed as having had that syndrome or something, because it would also then tie his behavior to, you know, killing his wife and a guy that was dropping off some sunglasses.
Right. Because, you know, his family, and again, they put on a brave face. You can understand, I guess, on some level. They still deny it, you know, that he killed them. But, you know, that's their dad, and they hung with him right through the past 30 years. It's bizarre, but they did.
I have a theory.
Dan Duran's theory, ladies and gentlemen. What's yours?
My theory is that they're afraid that parts of his brain will get out there into the general public and become a sideshow kind of, you know, here's OJ's brain, you know, museum or something. They chop it up and OJ parts are, you know, floating around the the carnival universe.
I thought what you were going to say.
Or Honey Bay or something.
I thought you were going to say, like, they were worried that parts of his, like a sci-fi movie, that parts of OJ's brain would get into the general population and everyone would start killing their wives. and some guy dropping off sunglasses. But think about that. I mean, how, you want to talk about that term that Ralph introduced us yesterday? Rage farming?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You want to talk about the original rage farmer. Like, what happened to Nicole? What's her last name again? Is that Simpson?
Brown.
Nicole Brown Simpson. Oh.
Yes, right.
What happened to her and that unfortunate kid isn't the result of premeditated, you know, that type of murder. That's just rage.
Yes. In the moment.
In the moment. And maybe back to the brain. You know, it would show a lot of those tendencies, and those, when they're able to examine the parts of the brain that are affected by repeatedly having your fucking bell rung. Like, listen, what happened to me yesterday? You think of the force it would take. And when you're here, Dan, next week, I'll show you these little anchor points. There's not enough bulk in them to have caused that damage. It's just sheer force. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that spring is loaded because in and of themselves, you couldn't take those things and whack them against the glass and break them. So think about a guy in football being hammered every play over all his life, his playing career. That's definitely doing something that alters your brain.
Yeah. I think you're onto something there, though. That may be because if the, you know, the family maintains that he's innocent, didn't do it, don't want to face reality. You're right. If they examine his brain and come out and say, yeah, this guy suffered from this and this and this, and it can manifest in this way, those rage moments, then it's like, oh, here we go. It's another reason he did it. So that's probably a good explanation. You know, there's another story, 1970, I think it was Rawlings, the helmet company. A high school kid, suffered a severe brain injury playing high school football in the United States, San Francisco area, I believe. And the parents sued the equipment company. And again, I believe it's Rawlings. I'm not sure. And they got Rawlings. This company got OJ to testify on their behalf. And it was really bizarre. I'm reading this story, and it was really bizarre because OJ's up there going, yep, you know, the minute you get on a football field, it's all up to you. You know, you can be injured. Obviously, they had paid him a lot of money to testify on their behalf. And it was all the standard stuff that the NFL was saying for years. You know, oh, no, the helmets are fine. It's just, hey, this is the type of sport. You might get injured. You may not. And all depends on the person. Anyway, apparently the jury was so enamored with OJ, because he could talk, that guy. He was pretty smooth. They were let off. The lawsuit was dropped. And apparently after the court case and everything, a lot of these jurors are asking OJ, you know, okay, can I get a picture taken with you and everything?
Yeah.
Anyway, it was after that lawsuit that the whole issue went dormant for decades. It was like, hey, football wins. Look at that. You know, you get on the football field. It's all up to you. It's not on us. It's on you. And it didn't move for decades. And how many professional football players were permanently injured, subtly permanently injured over their lives? Well, you saw the movie Concussion.
I was going to say that movie, yeah, that documentary. Horrible. Again, mm-hmm. it was the first time, or the beginning of the NFL putting into place protocols,
mm-hmm.
to help at least mitigate some of the damage. I want to talk about that in a second, but back to OJ, and you sort of brought up something I was going to bring up, Dan. You know, OJ's persona on talk shows, on movies, as the guy running through the airport as a Hertz rental car spokesman for years. His persona was not one of a rage farmer. He had a, you know, when you used to see him like that, his everyday, what people would say about him, he was a pretty sweet guy, very charming, you know, as you pointed out, you know, a smooth talking, you know, spokesperson. But it was something in his brain, something would snap.
Mm-hmm.
And because prior to killing Nicole, his wife, you know, there were many times, you know, they introduce evidence in the trial, you remember, of her having to call the police because he was beating her. Which isn't, yeah, by the way, sadly, is not uncommon, or hasn't been uncommon, for NFL players.
No, hockey too, Howard. There's, you know, Bob Probert. And,
yep.
Oh, there's a few of them. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember. But hockey has had the same problem too. And the sad point through the years is how the leagues, you know, for business purposes, obviously, have sort of like tried to deny and reject and defend themselves against the obvious.
Well, what I was going to say,
slimy.
And now, yeah, though, you know, Dan, now they, mm-hmm. have, in the modern NFL, which is, and I pointed this out during the season that passed, mainly populated by black kids now. Part of the reason that is true, Daniel, is, you know, a lot of middle class families no longer want their sons to be exposed to it because it's life altering.
So in high school, they don't allow their kids.
Less and less over the years. And the typical NFL team now, I don't know the numbers when OJ played 30, 40 years ago, but the percentage of black to white kids, men, and playing that sport is way skewed. And not just because they're better athletes. But now in the modern NFL, the concussion protocols are completely different than they used to be. If there's any suspicion now, they've got a concussion, they call it the concussion tent. So as soon as you get your bell rung and you feel a little bit dingy, they take you right away to assess you immediately. And if they assess you as at risk, they take you out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, so Dan, they just fucking send you, yeah, send you back in all woozy.
Have they changed the rules on what you can and can't do on the field?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, there's a controversial And again, I won't get into it. I'll just drop the name. It's called the hip drop tackle. Has been eliminated from the NFL now, where you grab a guy and you sort of pull his legs. And it's a big controversy right now because a lot of people are thinking, geez, that's how are we going to tackle now? That was just a basic part of the game, but the NFL, in their wisdom, has decided to take that tackle out of the game. If you're interested, you know, research it, because I can't explain it all right now. But there's all sorts of, you know, protecting quarterbacks now. You can hardly touch a quarterback. You know, hits, head-to-head hits have been eliminated, on and on and on. So they have, you know, since they've been exposed and since it's become obvious that two men smashing their heads together isn't a good idea, they have moved towards
that's right
some new rules.
they still all line up and then put their helmets into each other's gut
ish. Well, yeah, but it used to be the guys on the line. Mm-hmm. That was the, you know, of all the positions in the game,
there's not a lot of thrust there, though.
Because you're so close together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those positions, you're getting hit every play. Mm-hmm. Some of the more open field positions, defense and offense, where you're running an open field, that's when it can happen. Because you're in motion. And so, you know, an object in motion, meaning one also in motion, that's when I would say it's probably more likely. But those big fat guys on the line, they get hit every play. That's what you do for a living.
And traditionally, they're not the guys that have the CTE.
That's what I mean. They don't. Yeah. It's the guys in open field.
No.
Anyway,
it's the guys that take the big, as Howard says, open field blows, like the big blow that you see.
And in hockey, similarly, a lot of, at least from my memory as a kid playing defense, you know, when you would line somebody up, it's that kind of hip check along the boards where a guy is really going fast, where you can run into them and stop their motion. That's when injuries happen.
Yeah, but with hockey, traditionally, the guys that have died and suffered and had problems are the fighters. These have been punches to the head.
Yeah.
This is why when I watch this UFC, it's like I can't watch it. Like, I don't get any enjoyment out of that. And what's their stance on brain injuries and head injuries?
I have no idea.
It's just so barbaric. It's not much.
We're making too much money to worry.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, listen, it's all entertainment. I haven't, and I have nothing against it. I don't really think, what I would say about UFC, I just don't think about it. But I mean, boxing,
right.
It never comes up. I never stop and watch it. I know who Connor McDavid is, or no, what's his name? Connor. Mm-hmm. Who's the
McGregor?
Connor McGregor. Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah.
Ooh, proper 12.
Mm. I don't know. What's that mean?
I don't even know what that meant.
That's Irish whiskey.
Mm. Okay. By the way, speaking of whiskey, let's change subject. Speaking of whiskey, I sent Darren, our friend Darren, Darren, a note yesterday with the picture of some non-alcoholic booze. I'm changing the subject now. Non-alcoholic booze I bought, and it's non-alcoholic Guinness. I haven't tried it yet, but I sent Darren a note. What's that?
He has. Yeah. I have too.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said I found out that he had tried it. And what I wanted to know is that because I thought, oh, just starting to be, it's non-alcoholic beer season, so I thought I'd try it. And he said he liked it, but my question was, isn't Guinness normally served sort of room temperature? Like when it comes out of the tap, isn't? Am I wrong? I always thought it was more, it wasn't, because when I drank over in the UK, I thought they served their beer a lot less cool than us.
Well, yes, but not room temperature.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like it's not, you don't necessarily have an ice cold Guinness, right? But it's chilled. I had one in a bar last week at the Shepherd's Crook there in Georgetown. And again, it's
a Guinness,
like,
or a non-alcoholic one?
A Guinness. At Darren's a couple of weeks ago at the cottage, I had a non-alcohol Guinness. It was good. I'm going to be completely honest. I could tell a little bit of a difference. But really? As far as non-alcoholic beers go, I would say it's the best one I've had yet. But again, with me, it's the cost factor too, availability and cost factor. Because It's more expensive than regular Guinness, and regular Guinness is just 4%, so I don't know.
Darren said about you, he said, I've had some, and it's fantastic. Pretty much tastes exactly like the real deal, which I have no perspective on, because I don't know if I ever drank a real Guinness. He said, I gave Fred one to try last week, and he couldn't tell much difference.
No.
Did you pour it into a glass and stuff, too? Because there's a whole ritual about how long it's supposed to sit in the bubbles and all that stuff. Did it look the same as the real one?
Yes. Here's what I would say about this Guinness. If he had said to me, do you want the Guinness? And not
if he said what to you?
Do you want the Guinness?
He would put on an accent and say, do you want the Guinness? Do you want the Guinness?
Brought it to me without telling me it was non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yes, I, you know what? I could probably drink that and not say anything or not know the difference. Him having told me, once you become conscious, it's like, it's pretty close.
Yeah.
But there's just something there that isn't the same.
Well, I'm going to try it. When you said you mentioned some Irish whiskey.
Yes.
So most people listening to the show know I haven't drank alcohol I'm in my ninth year. So it's a long time since I've had any booze. But I didn't drink any non-alcoholic products until like 4 or 5 years into it. I think I tried. We had a wine sponsor on our show.
Yes.
And
Churchill Cellars.
No. Remember? No, not Churchill. I love those guys. It was a non-alcoholic wine.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And I don't remember it, but that was kind of like the only sampling that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last 3 or 4 years, when I first tried non-alcoholic beer, it wasn't very good. And it's gotten way better. Corona, Heineken, pretty good. At least from my memory, it tastes pretty good. I'm sorry.
Let's be honest, that non-alcoholic wine.
It's terrible. It was terrible.
It wasn't very good, especially the wine.
Yeah. And I haven't had to this point, and I've tried a few, any kind of wine that tasted like wine. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to get to is they now have a whole new category of fake whiskey, fake gin.
What?
Yes, yes. In fact, Darren and I talked about this. They've got, Dan, what's that famous green bottle gin?
Tanqueray?
They have a zero alcohol gin. There's zero alcohol whiskey. And recently I tried one of these mixed drinks. I'm trying to remember. It was in a fancy grocery store. It might have even been like Bruno's. Bruno's is the only grocery store around here that's open on holidays. So whenever the Easter weekend was, I was in there getting some stuff because the kids were coming over. And I saw this, and it was a non-alcohol whiskey mixed drink. And I got to tell you, it was pretty good. Not just as a drink, but it was... The taste of whiskey was very prominent. And
how do they mimic the alcohol?
I don't know. But I was going to order one of these gins because I thought, hey, Dan comes over. Somebody's over and I can make a gin and tonic. But I'm a bit reticent because when I have a fake beer, it's not like I have this I want to have a real beer now, because there's... I don't know. I don't have that same association, but I'm a little bit, I don't know. I don't, nervous is the wrong way to put it, but I'm a little bit reticent.
I get it.
Because I don't know if I want to be sitting around sipping on a whiskey. I don't know what the point of that would be for me.
Could be a gateway back into,
you know what? Yeah, it could be. I mean, I don't feel like all of a sudden I'm going to start fucking hammering back, whiskey shots, but... I'll just say this. This drink I bought at Bruno's that day was way too close to booze. It was very, very close.
That category, the sales of alcohol alternatives, according to Ad Age, shot up 30% in 2023. Mm-hmm. And it's they're anticipating it's going to grow another 25% through 2026.
Listen, we all have our reasons. And again, maybe I'm naive, but there's no real reason for me to have non-alcoholic beer. You know what I mean? It's like, and non-alcoholic whiskey, because I rarely drink whiskey. Rarely drink wine. I drink beer, and not enough of it that, you know, what is the point for somebody like me to have a non-alcoholic beer? You know what I mean? It's like...
Other than calories.
Because it's more expensive.
I shouldn't say calories. No, I know it. I'm sorry.
No,
I missed
calories one. Is... No, yeah.
No, not calories. Yeah. The point would be, if you were over here... Mm-hmm. I don't know why it would be. But if you were over here and you wanted to have two or three beers, you could have one alcohol one and a couple non-alcoholics and drive home.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. There is a scenario, yes. But here in my home, like I wouldn't, there's no reason, because I, you know, what's today, Wednesday? I've had one beer since Saturday. I had a Guinness sitting down here, and it's like, well, why would I go buy a non-alcohol Guinness that actually costs more than a regular Guinness? You know what I mean?
No, I get it.
It doesn't make sense. Now, if my doctor said, hey, buddy, you got to cut out the alcohol completely, cut it off, then it all starts to make sense, right?
Well, I can tell you, a couple years ago, Rachel, ex-GFR, and I went to the cottage, and she has a treat for me, because I was saying, you know, it would be kind of fun to have something else to drink, and I wanted to make a Caesar. And when I drank Caesars, one of my favorite drinks, but I drank them with gin. Gin's, and I've always said this to people, if you drink vodka Caesars, try it with gin, because it does something, it's a different flavor. So she bought this stuff. It was called Seedlip, and it was like a gin. It was supposed to be something that tastes like gin, and it tasted nothing like gin. So I was kind of under the mindset of like, well, you know, it doesn't taste like gin. It would never make me want to have a gin. But I can tell you, if the gins are anything like this whiskey drink I drank, it tasted exactly like whiskey to me, to the point where I was sort of drinking it. I would love to get it for you guys, because I remember drinking it thinking, oh my goodness, there's a flavor that I haven't had in a long time. And I don't know what my point of all this is. I said to Darren, I don't know if I'm going to order it. If somebody had it, I'd try it, but I don't need to get a 40 ounce or a fake gin in my house.
Well, that's it. You know, and excuse me, I find a lot, you know, people that go to non-alcoholic, they tend to be big cheerleaders for it, really hoping that it's, you know, is the same or totally consistent or no different. But again, to my discerning taste, I've yet to, including this Guinness, which was good and it was fine and I would drink it, it was still not quite there to me.
All right.
I want to tell you a story.
Dan Durant's news. Go away, come back. We'll see you very soon. The retirement Sherpa is going to be with us today. We're going to do a few emails today just because, as we mentioned, we got this guy coming on tomorrow and we don't want to rush through it. We want to take our time. We don't want it to be a bunch of screaming rage farmers, and we don't want to also shortchange the fine people that have sent us emails. Although we will announce the email of the week or whatever tomorrow, and then that person we will rename the studio after you for next week's programming. All right, so there you go. In the meantime, Freddie, let's talk about these fine folks.
The Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. You know, whether it's prescriptions and dental, whether it's therapies, they have an HR component. Yes, they do. Mental health, big priority now. They have the Teladoc system. So they're always improving this plan and holding the line on premiums as best they can through it all. Brett Tanner was on not long ago, and as he said, You know, a lot of these private companies have gone up 10-12% in a year. Not the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, because they're a nonprofit, so they can control those premiums. And of course, that's major for a small business, because you don't want to get into it and then find out your costs are skyrocketing. That will not happen. So if you've thought about a benefits package for your small business, go to chamberplan.ca and click on a little button there that says free quote. The Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan. That's what you want. That's what you want.
I'll stay with you maybe a couple days.
You know this song?
You said, let me go
I think so. One bourbon, one scotch, and one beer.
Yes. Yes.
I can see his face.
George Thorogood.
He said, I don't know, man. She kind of funny and all. I said, I know.
Yeah, you've been around me when I drank the, when I was, at the end of my drinking, I was drinking, like, I would have a scotch and a beer because I wanted to get a buzz on. And I drank some scotch. I drank whiskey. I drank rye as a kid. You know, in Saskatchewan, rye is what people drink. Rye and Coke. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of thinking, I remember having this conversation with Yee Darren. I was thinking, yeah, you know, I've started seeing a bunch of these, you know, Tanqueray gin, and what would that be like? Or Captain Morgan's rum, like non-alcoholic rum. I mean, just out of curiosity, what does it taste like? But I'm not that interested. I'm not that interested in having it around me.
No, I get it. Totally. You know what connection I've made as I get older? Maybe wine, more than one shot of like Irish whiskey in an evening, which rarely happens. But if it does, it affects my sleep. I don't sleep as well. It's weird, you know, because people are of the belief you get hammered and, you know, you pass out. And that's not necessarily.
No, it's not the case at all.
It's actually not the case at all.
No.
And that's one thing I have noticed, that if, you know, you have dinner and you have a couple of glasses of wine and then maybe a shot after, it's like, yeah, I don't sleep as well. I mean, that's quite obvious at this point in my life.
Well, I've been on a quest. Mm-hmm. I have a friend that's a wine distributor. Great guy. Great mm-hmm. golf guy, too. Kevin Lynch is his name. And he, I've been asking every time I see him, I go, Kevin, where are we making any progress with the non-alcoholic wine? He's part of this group of guys I hang out with, including Mike Kazarian, who was with us yesterday, talking a little bit about the Bank of Canada rate. It's held at 5. Mike's an owner-operator of Lender's Choice Mortgages, Mortgage Alliance, license number 13582. There's some legal for you. But the real crux of this next 30 to 40 seconds is, now is the time. It would be great if you could approach Mike, at least have a conversation. Mike@lenderschoice.ca. Because, you know, you can go to your bank and take whatever they give you, but Mike is going to take the time. Somebody with his experience is going to make sure the advice you get is going to get you not only the best rate, but the best type of mortgage that suits the type of mortgage you need, not just one size fits all. He wants to get you the lender that makes the most sense for you to achieve your goals. They can find a solution for all your mortgage financing needs. As I mentioned yesterday, if you want to support this show, this is how to do it. Reach out to Mike, have a conversation. Show him that this program does produce results. Mike@lenderschoicemortgage.ca, or just go to the website, lenderschoice.ca. And you you make a good point, too. A guy who drinks like you, and I take your word for it. When you say they're more expensive, I'm taking your word for it, because the number of times I've gone into an LCBO in 9 years, two hands. I mean, I go the odd time if I'm on my way to someone's house and I got to buy a bottle of wine. But I couldn't even tell you what I paid for these four. What do they call them? Guinnesses yesterday. I said, "Oh, here, I'll try this." Mm-hmm. So what, excuse my stupidity when I ask this question. What is a six pack of normal beer or alcohol beer cost?
Well, it all depends on what you're buying, but a six pack would be around, I don't know, $13-$14. I don't know.
Okay, so let's call it $14. What are these things costing me?
I have no idea.
You just know they're more expensive.
And even if they're the same price, it's a little bewildering because you would think not having the alcohol would push them into a soft drink category.
Yeah.
But the process of de-alcoholizing this beer is expensive, as Buddy Boy told us that we were talking to a few weeks ago, right, from that small brewery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. It actually costs more to do this. The yeah. I'm going to get to some emails, but I'll tell you, I've seen the category grow since I started trying them 4 or 5 years ago. That section in the supermarket, and I've seen it in the liquor store too.
Mm-hmm.
That section's grown crazy. It's unbelievable how much more there is. So there must be some people that have moved over to it. And maybe for the reason I said about you, it's like, you know, I'd like to have, you know, 3 or 4 beers, and if 3 or 2 or half of them are non-alcohol, I can have more, I guess. All right.
I have this, but you know what I love when I'm not? Sometimes, if I do in between beers up north or whatever, I love my Perrier, especially with a twist of lime.
And isn't that more expensive than a real beer, too? Or not?
No.
Howie. Okay, I don't fucking know.
At Costco, you can get 24 for like $20.
All right.
Of 500 mil bottles.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to take a little time now. We got about 20 minutes before the Sherpa, so we'll see. We'll go as far as that gets us. And, you know, if we have a couple left over for tomorrow, so be it. In the meantime.
Hi, guys.
All right. Off the top, subject matter, Gulf Orangeville. This is from Ben Secord. Hi, guys. Okay, now that Mr. Brio, this is Bill Brio, our buddy, is in Orangeville, have you not looked to see the courses around golf courses? Orangeville Golf Course is a nice mature course with plenty of surprises to launch a cart into the water. Oh, very funny. Launch a cart into the water. Is he referencing that time that I chased your golf cart down the... Yeah, anyway.
That's right.
Mm. Lynbrook is a beauty. Par 3, very challenging. I don't like par 3s, personally. Maybe not.
Wait, Mr. Howard, you don't like par 3 courses or par 3 holes?
Par 3 courses.
Oh, you mean just courses that are like executive courses or just...
Yeah, I
know. Yeah,
I don't enjoy them, to be honest.
All right.
Maybe not, Mr. Howard, but still hard to believe. It all used to be a farmer's field. Woo, most golf courses were. Plus, the bigger wigs like Shelburne and Hockley Valley Golf Clubs, Aaron, I've heard has a pretty good mature course, too. Okay? Guys, I love you. Bowel working consistently and well, and my heart rate is still beating at an even normal most of the time pace, I think. I should check. Thanks, Ben. So that's a little review of golf courses to the, northwest of the city.
Great work, Ben. Always great hearing from you. This is from another regular contributor named Manfred Bayer. Haven't heard from him for a while, but his name is very familiar. He says, Hi, guys. Thought you might enjoy this. It's pretty good. Have a good day. And no vital signs, but we'll just assume he's fine. Now, we said we weren't going to do any Trump stuff today, or very little, but have a listen to this. Did you listen to it, by the way?
No, what is it? No.
It's a parody of...
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did.
It's Billy Joel's He's Always a Moron.
He will stare at the sun, even in an eclipse. And he uses two hands for the water he sips. Mispronounces Thailand, Yosemite, Kofifi. Yeah, he has the best words, but he's always a moron to me.
Maybe we'll use this when we walks introduce this guy to moron.
Queen breaking all protocols. Walks slowly down ramps to prevent slips and falls. Not as stable a genius as he claims to be. Though he dances quite well, he is always a moron to me.
Well, there you go. It goes on like that. Just look it up if you want to hear the rest of it. But thank you, Manfred Bayer, for that.
I know timing was an issue because we were off for a few days, but again, that that Gettysburg speech of his is just, to me, that's...
Oh, yeah.
That just, you know what I mean? That just so usurps anything that Biden has said. I don't care, and I know Biden has issue. I get it. But that Gettysburg thing is the most frightening thing I've heard from him yet. Just, again, for so
go
many
look
reasons.
It up. I was going to say, I'm not. Was it in front of the courthouse or at? It was at a rally. I can't remember.
It was at a rally, at a about rally. 2 hours away from Gettysburg.
Right. That's right.
Like an idiot.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Have you listened to the latest Smart List?
No.
It's President Joe Biden, former President Barack Obama, and former President Bill Clinton hanging out with these three knuckleheads.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to about 20 minutes of it yesterday, but to the point you just made.
Mm-hmm.
This Joseph Biden guy at 80 years old, a thousand times more coherent than this other fella. Just listen to it. Yeah, I mean, he's having a conversation. He's able to stay on point. Him and Obama are going back and forth. Clinton doesn't do as much talking, but it's, you know, it's a campaign stop is what it is.
Well, and as I say, listen, and I know the way the media works, like a lot of these right-wing outlets like Fox and Newsmax and everything. If that cognitive thing is a big issue for you, why haven't you played the Gettysburg thing?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Why haven't you played that? If that's an issue to you in a president, whether sitting or about to be, if that's an issue for you, why haven't you played that Gettysburg thing for anyone?
Well, they don't play because it's all that. Let's not get bogged down. Let's not get bogged down.
I know.
Because we know, because the answer is simple.
Yes, I know what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, tomorrow's Trump Day on the show. In the meantime.
Hi, guys. Hi, guys.
Subject matter. Dominican dogs. This is from our buddy Jimmy Kloss. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Thursday's show hit another personal note when Fred mentioned the dogs of the Dominican. We rescued our Turks 12 years ago. He was obviously from the Turks and Caicos. Fred mentioned how the Caribbean dogs are looked after. They are actually called pot cakes because they would clean the pots of the burnt on rice and beans that the women would leave outside the back doors. Anyway, our dog is a beauty. His heart rate is healthy and happy because he gets long walks while I listen to the show, and his bowel movements are more than healthy as well.
Aww.
And he sent along a picture of Turks, who's a beaut. God, I love dogs. Don't you, Howie? Don't you?
I was just thinking, you know, the last three nights, I was away for 5 or 6 days. Well, however long it was. When I got home, Stan greeted me with tears and whimpering and licking my face. And then the last three nights, he's gotten up on the bed and won't leave my side. I fucking love that boy.
Yeah, I know. I know. But yeah, again, big takeaway from Dominican was the dogs. Just delightful. Delightful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's an email.
Hi, guys.
From Jeffrey Kilbourne. And he says, hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
He's asked that... I don't read all of this. I don't know that he didn't want me to maybe mention any of it, but I want to mention part of it. And here's what I mean. Jeffrey has written to some MPPs complaining, and we're not complaining, reporting about all this, the vile anti-Semitism that now is just commonplace. It's so commonplace that it's incalculable. If you didn't listen to yesterday's show, if you want to hear more about it. But the subject line is Law and Order. And he said, hi, guys, this is not one to read on air. I just wanted Howard in particular to know that I think what's going on in this country right now is completely unacceptable. Hope you're having a great weekend, Jeff. And I just wanted to thank Jeff. I'm not sure if you looked at this email, but he wrote a very heartfelt I don't know what else people can do other than, you know, complain to their local MPPs. For instance, in the Ontario legislature, where there's not supposed to be any displays of political affiliation. I don't know what the term is, but there's a sitting, you know, MPP with her kafaya on. Like, fuck me already. Like, enough. I don't know. I saw the picture of her this morning. I don't know her name.
From what respect? From what respect? Enough. What do you
mean?
You're
not supposed to wear those.
Oh, okay. Right.
It goes against everyone else is, everyone else is going by the regulations. Everyone else is adhering to it.
You know, that ship has sailed.
No, but you're not supposed to have it on. So no, get it the fuck off.
Yeah,
because if she were my representative, I'd be writing her letter and saying, get the fuck out of there with that.
But anyway. Again, the note to the MP, they are going to run and hide so fast from this issue because there aren't enough Jews compared to people that don't like Jews. That's what we're dealing with now.
No, you're right.
As the fabric and the complexion of this country changes, you know what politicians are like. It's all about the parking spot. How do I get elected? Not enough Jews. Sorry. More people that don't like Jews you have to pander to.
Well, and the irony, and we, you know, we mentioned it yesterday, but, you know, in a world of 8 billion people, there are 15 million Jews. So as Ralph was saying yesterday, it's like we're a minority. There's just not enough of us. Because if it was a bigger minority, if it were black people or Asians, like I brought that up yesterday's show. What happened to Asian? If this were this kind of vitriol or whatever you want to call it, a display of hatred was to Asian people, God forbid.
Howard, I was thinking about this. Do you remember? And I'm going to use the term, and it's awful because I don't know how well. Maybe I won't. But do you remember several years ago there was that whole issue of Asian people were being attacked while fishing in Ontario? Do you remember that? And there was a term for it. The shit hit the fan. It was front page fucking news. And even the people that were confronting these Asian people said, listen, they're pulling too many fish out of the lake. They're keeping fish that aren't big enough. You know, there are fishing laws in Ontario that we all have to adhere to so that the supply remains bountiful. We can all fish for years to come. And a lot of these rules were being broken by a certain culture, and they claim they didn't know, they didn't understand, but there were confrontations. Do you not remember what a huge issue that was?
You know what?
And this was over fish.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I don't. But
probably bigger than this, what we're going through now. And what it does is sort of display the selective
selective concern. Outrage. No, it's selective outrage.
And selective concern over who we're dealing with or who's being attacked.
And again, I don't want to get, again, we got other people to acknowledge, but if Asian kids or black kids or gay or trans, name the minority, were being blocked at Columbia University the way, like, I don't know if you've noticed that. The shit that's going on down there, it's like 1938. It's gone beyond. And I know Dan would say, yeah, I know, but it's terrible, the things that are going on. Yeah, it's terrible what's going on in the Middle East. But Columbia University is not the Middle East. And if that were Asian kids being harassed the way Jewish kids are, they would have shut it down by noon.
I heard it explained. Again, when people want to, again, there's this word again that's become quite popular over the past few years, conflate. People want to conflate these issues. But there are issues, and then there's right and wrong. What we're seeing on those universities in the streets of Toronto, there's right and wrong. There's no middle ground here. To call for the death of people is wrong. Like, there's no excuse for that. Use your head. Yeah, there's issues. But that doesn't mean that innocent people who have nothing to do with it should die.
Right.
And I know what people are going to say. Well, what about Gaza? People are dying. That's a freaking war. Sorry. We're not at war here.
You know, that video that's gone viral of this, and I'm sorry to say I know who she is. I mean, I follow this account on Twitter, formerly known as X or X. And that woman saying to Alec Baldwin, you know, trying to, she's harassing him about this, you know, the gun that went off. But then she starts saying, you know, say free Palestine, say, you know, like, fuck off already. Like, what do you want? Like, you listen, I can get behind the point. And Ralph made a good explanation about Netanyahu and the government, etc. I can get behind it as a, you know, they call it a thought experiment. But where I can't, where I don't understand your the idea of harassing Jews in North America or anywhere else in the world and just getting away with it. Because if, you know, if that was a woman harassing an actor to get them to say, just go ahead and say blacks are lazy. Go ahead and say something about the Asians. Go ahead and say something about trans kid. She'd be fucking shot dead. No, you know, there's a meme right now. It shows one picture. It's a bunch of diverse children saying queers for Palestine on the top half of this picture. And it's a bunch of young kids, like my daughter's age. On the bottom is a body being dragged through the streets, and it says queers in Palestine.
Yes. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Let's
but even the Netanyahu stuff in the government, it's like they had a bad government in the United States. They voted it out. I mean, some may perceive our government is bad now. It will be voted out. Well, what else can you do in Israel but vote out the government? I mean, to me, that's just immaterial at this point. Yeah, you don't like what he's doing. You don't like well, then vote them out.
Like, yeah, and as I've said, they're not harassing Israelis around the world. They're just harassing Jews.
Yeah,
you want to talk about conflation? All right, there's another Humble and Fred Humble and Fred mini rant brought to you by Humble and Fred. And now we continue with the nonsense.
Hi guys.
Subject matter: Augusta birds. This comes from the West Coast. Our buddy Mike Hannafin. He says, "Hi, dudes.
Hi, guys.
Hi, dudes."
Next year, when previewing and reviewing the Masters, instead of the usual Masters music, can you play the Masters loop of recorded loud birds chirping?
This is
what Mike says.
It's so dumb.
Just like they pipe into the CBS broadcasts, obviously fake, and it's the same recording every year. I'm still hearing those damn birds in my head 2 days later. Yours in chirping, Mike. Now, honestly, I was watching the Masters this year, and I thought, "Oh, it's nice to hear those birds." I didn't know that was fake.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
They sort of pipe that background noise in there to set the scene. Jesus. And oh yeah, man! Remember, I told you that CBS pays zero for the broadcast rights to that tournament,
right?
And so Augusta National Golf Course, that's one of their rules, that they also never show any part of the golf course that could have any flaws on it. Like, you know, not that there is very many, I'm sure. That's great. I saw that note from Mike and made me laugh. Here's something from a guy named Tony that might help palate cleanse all the nonsense. Let me see where it says here.
Hi, guys.
Subject line, AI comedy. Just from Tony with no vital signs. Of course, he says hi, guys, because he's not a monster.
Hi, guys,
he says, in keeping with your AI creation, I discovered this site and came up with this. I don't know if we should be worried or very scared for the future. Hope you enjoy it, Tony. And so what he's done is he's put in some information into this AI generator and come up with a comedian.
This is a story about two guys from Toronto. One named Howard, the other named Fred. They got a podcast because they're just too cool. They talk about farts and boners. They both got fired from the Edge. They both like the Beatles and beef jerky.
Oh, fuck.
Jerky. Sometimes they get excitement dumps.
Oh. So I don't know. Thank you, Tony. By the way, very funny, scary, and we weren't fired from The Edge, for the record.
Yeah.
One of the few places we haven't been fired from, but that is interesting, man.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for that. Do you have one more to go? Because I think we have time for one more each.
Okay.
All right.
Right on.
Hi, guys.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Hi, guys.
Subject matter, law and order. This is from Wayne.
Email.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
He says, I hope you were watching Law and Order Toronto last week, where the plot revolved around a high-profile Toronto disc jockey who was abusive to his staff.
What?
Including some rough sex with an intern. But it was overlooked by his radio colleagues because there was big money involved. I'm not sure where they get these crazy plot ideas from, but it was compelling viewing. Thanks, Wayne. And he signs off here, Judge Hate Scowl. But isn't that interesting?
By the way, I like that. First of all, before we get to the the content, you know, we've been going with bowel movements and heart rate for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne may have inspired a whole new trend with our listeners where you can sign it off with your cottage sign. Judge Hate Scowl is fucking, that is so humble and Fred and funny.
Right on.
Judge, so yeah, maybe Wayne started a trend. Anyway, as far as the content goes, when you and I saw this at the end of the show yesterday.
Yeah. Law and Order Toronto did an episode of Toronto DJ abusive to his staff. Wonder where they got that idea. Of course, they included some rough sex with an intern. Of course, any television show has to put a little bit of sex in. It's just part of it.
Especially apparently that show, which I've never seen, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So that part we can't speak to. They would just do that for plot, embellishment, make it a little sexier. But the seed of the idea, Toronto DJ abusive to his staff, his colleagues ignored it because there was big money involved. Wonder where that came from.
Well, the question you asked me after the show, you and I were, you know, discussing this, and we were wondering if Voldemort would see that, or I guarantee you he would hear about that.
Yeah, and what a legacy.
Again, yeah,
as
man.
As I said, you Google his name, and that's your legacy, buddy, and now a TV show like this. Of course, that's where they probably got the idea. You know, it was a big news story. I guess it's relatable because it's, you know, for whatever reason, several reasons.
But, you know, it is relatable. I mean, and as far as the rough sex, or I know... From what I know of that show, they always have to have some of that in it. So, but, you know, a plot revolving a high-profile Toronto DJ abusive to himself, that's a pretty specific.
I'd say.
You know, that's not just, you know, there's a lot of stories about things that happen and don't happen in radio stations.
Yeah. And, and I hope a lot of those retro snakes we worked with were watching it, too. Radio colleagues.
Yeah, you know exactly.
Big money was involved. Fucking know who you are.
Exactly. And, you know, and one of the guys that worked with him, you know, one of his fucking buddies who called us the untrustworthy. He called us untrustworthy cocksuckers. The other guy with the thin skin used to do the bleeps. I wonder what he thinks of all of this. Anyway, we're going to finish with a radio-related email.
Hi, guys.
This is from another longtime fan of the show. Haven't heard from him for a long time, though.
Hi, guys.
His name is Riaz. His subject line, hitting the post. He says, hi, guys. Sorry, I jumped the gun there. He said, hi, guys. It entertains me more than it probably should, hearing Howard intro a song and hitting the post. Such a pro, says Riaz. Resting heart rate 60, BMs daily, can set your watch by it. And I say to you, Riaz, I say thank you. I appreciate that you like the odd time that I screw around and try and hit the post. It used to be my job, like for many, many years as a disc jockey. That's what I had to do. The song would start. You know, I'd give a bit of information and try and hitting the post is where you basically say the call letters just before the song starts to sing or the guy starts singing.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to do one now?
Well, the thing is, I wish I would have prepared because I don't know the actual intro time of this song. But I'll give it a shot, okay?
And what is the song?
Hold Your Head Up. Actually, do you have a song that's more like from the Edge days? Because I was going to incorporate you.
Oh, the Edge days.
I was going to incorporate you into this. Off the top of your head, can you give me an Edge song? Because I couldn't think of something. I know one. Should I do Blur?
Song two? Or?
Yes. Yes, that one's easy. Easier, anyway. Okay, here. So this was basically, and we've talked about this on the show many, many times, when Fred and I would be babbling like idiots, and we
Does it have an intro that lasts before? Oh, okay, yep. Go ahead.
And we would be late for the news, which included Fred's sports, and so we would say to our producer, play song two, and that was kind of a song. It was kind of like the audience knew that we were obviously late, and so here we go. It's 8:47. Freddie's news and Freddie's sports comment coming up right after Mary Ellen's news. As well, more about Humble and Fred's really tough contest on the way. But first, song two on Edge 102. Close enough. I got part of it. Oh. Close enough.
Oh, it gave me a warm one. Mm.
I was going to go all the way up to Got My Head Shaved, but I couldn't remember how many seconds that was. But yeah, man, we did that time and time again. That was like the to the point where I was getting shit for playing it. yeah, man. Okay, Tim Niblett is standing by, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I call that memory music. That's one of those songs that there's a few when I hear, I just remember fun times, great moments.
Yeah, we played about six songs an hour back in our heyday. This wasn't one of them, but this song has become part of the fabric of the Humble and Fred show because it makes one think. It's Professor Nibblesworth time, an important time each week as we set aside a few minutes to talk about life. Real life, Fred, not fake Humble and Fred bullshit life. Tim.Niblett at RaymondJames.ca. Here he is, folks, the retirement Sherpa.
Hello. Good morning there, guys.
Yeah.
We got two out of three back in the GTA, and I'll be three for three next week.
Oh, boy. It's good to hear your voice. I asked last week, you said you were driving back, I think, this week.
Yeah, we hit the road on Saturday, go visit our daughter and family in Tallahassee for the last time because they're moving up to Waterloo in May, which is exciting. So,
What? They're leaving Florida for Waterloo?
Recruited by University of Waterloo. Canada had a big program where I think it was 32 researchers, all kinds of disciplines all across the country. And they were ponying up some good hard-earned tax dollars of ours to fund some research.
So your grandson is going to be that close?
Oh, I can't wait, Fred. It's going to be fantastic.
Of course it is, Tim. That's fantastic for a grandpa.
Yeah.
Wow.
And by the way, for the record, I had been paying attention and knew that your daughter was coming back, but that's just me. Timmy, let's go. There's a lot of information that's, sometimes you see this online and you click on it and it'll say like, you know, how much do you need to retire? What's the cheapest country to retire? And today, as Fred has been teasing the last couple of days, Tim's going to talk about something that I think is very interesting. The top 25 countries for retirement this year and some of the criterium that goes into making a choice about where you might want to spend your retirement years.
Yeah, to me, the more important part or interesting part of this is the criteria that they used to rate the countries. I mean, Europe dominated. They were, I think, 72% or whatever. I can't see on my screen here of the countries. The only Pacific ones were Australia, New Zealand, not surprisingly, Canada higher than the States and all. But yeah, I thought that the categories, we of course often talk about money. Finances in retirement was one of them, but it was only one of four that they used to rank things.
And Canada ranks pretty good, doesn't it, actually?
Well, lucky for us, Fred, they didn't take weather into account, so right. That's probably why we did a little better. But actually, having said that, most of the top ones probably have similar climates to us, I think. Switzerland, Iceland, Norway, that sort of thing. Uh-huh. But, Canada did well. So here's where, well, this is a money thing, too. Material well-being was something that they looked at, the per capita income, income equality, and unemployment. So we are kind of starting with money stuff on half of the categories. But then these are the things we really need to take into account when we're talking about aging with energy, right? I mean, your health, it's corny, but, you know, where you live, what's the life expectancy like? Is it one of those blue zones that we've heard about? What's the health insurance like, the health expenditure per capita and all? And I mean, for us personally, and I need to clean up my act as often on this, you know, we just need to be able to age with energy, to feel good, to feel healthy, to, you know, just do everyday tasks and hopefully lots more.
The chart that I'm looking at, you know, I'm you know, Norway being the best place to live. And so obviously most people have this imagination about or this idea of retiring someplace warm. So, but you don't get to the U.S. here until well down this list. It's actually toward the bottom of the 25.
Right. They don't drill through, or maybe they do and I can't find it. But I think just a lot of the income inequities down here would probably be part of the challenges and all. And again, the health care, you know, quality of life, right?
Right.
They talk about happiness. I don't quite know how they, well, I guess you can ask people how happy they are. Air, water, for sure. Environment, biodiversity, and all. And again, I think that we got to kind of reverse engineer our retirement plans. It's not only about what sort of money will you have come retirement, but where's the right place for you to live? Is it a big town? Is it a small town? Is it near family? Maybe it's away from family, you know, depending on things. So we've got to look at other factors for success in retirement.
You know, that's one statistic I would love to see. How many people say my age, my position, are maybe Howard soon, where you want to move, you want to leave or change your scene, but that deciding where that place is, it's not easy. It isn't easy at all.
Well, and Tim, you know, Tim's daughter moving back to town is a great example. I had this conversation that, you know, because you have to decide where you want to live and where you want to live in proximity to your grandkids. And it's something that I would have not considered. But now that my, you know, one of my daughters for sure is getting into that time, and I've seen how it's affected my brothers. But imagine, you know, that becomes a factor for people. I'm not moving in Norway, you know, no matter how great it is for retirement.
But in Tim's situation, like, sometimes I almost wish my motivation for moving, if my daughter came to me and said, we're moving to the East Coast, would be, great, I'm moving to the East Coast.
Yeah, you know, exactly. What I
mean? There's a distinct reason why. But yeah, it's not easy. But Tim, you get it the other way. They're coming to you. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah, thanks. But the funny part is that we probably won't see them anymore, right? They'll be physically closer, but we're kind of equal times in both places, give or take.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens when they're an hour and a half away, hour and a half versus three and a half, because we would have nice long visits because of the time frame getting together, right? So this might be a little more of a little brunch here, a little dinner there or whatever. But yeah, that'll help. You know, there is nobody that Lauren and I have more fun with than our daughter and son-in-law. We just have such a great time with them. So that'll definitely be a quality of life thing if we can see more of them.
And that is part of that list: health, quality of life, material well-being, retirement, finances. Because a lot of times I think when we say have a conversation with Tim and have a conversation with Sherpa Jay, it's not just about, you know, debt and dividends. It's about the other aspects of retirement. That's why they call themselves retirement Sherpas, because it's not just about financial planning. And as I said about Kazarian, if you want to support our program, then support the people that do support our program. Give Tim and Jay a call and at least get the conversation started, because a lot of people, even very recently, have discovered that there is a second opinion. There's another conversation to be had. Isn't that right, T?
Yeah, the last people to reach out, and we've had a number recently, as you guys know, over the, I don't know, 7-8 years or so, there's definitely been some ebbs and flows along the way, but yeah, they were with a bank with a major institution, and just kind of weren't feeling the love, weren't feeling the relationship, the connection, and that sort of thing, right? So we haven't looked under the hood yet. Hopefully we can find some numbers we can do better for them too, and usually we can, but yeah, even if we can just make the experience better for them, then it's kind of like if you're with your doctor or your lawyer and you can't kind of tell them the truth because you're not comfortable with that conversation.
Oh yeah.
It's very important to feel comfortable with your financial advisor to tell all your deepest, darkest secrets there.
Well, listen, safe travels on the way back. Looking forward to seeing you at a ladies' night in the not-so-distant future. You've missed nothing. The weather here has just been sort of gray and sort of sucky, but we're looking for some sunshine when you come north, okay?
Well, I'll bring the sunshine there, Brother Howard. Don't you worry about that.
Okay, but, my friend.
Maybe, for old time's sake, I'll pop by the Queensway one Wednesday morning and...
I would love that. You and me, my friend. Yeah. Tim.Niblin at RaymondJames.ca. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we can maybe go for a little brekkie with some non-alcoholic beer after that.
That's right. Hey, Fred, that is one of the advantages of having a you can have a non-alcoholic Guinness at breakfast.
Sure.
All right,
why not?
Safe travels, my friend. Be well. See you soon.
Great seeing you. Thanks, guys.
Okay, pal. See ya.
Hey, Fred, man.
Yes.
I think you want to talk about, when are the Leafs playing again? Is it tonight?
It's tonight, game 3.
Okay.
What are we going to get, Howie? What are we going to get?
Well, hopefully you've got some Bodog odds for us. Have you done that already, or you haven't done it, have you?
No, I'm doing it now.
All right.
As I said, for game 3, I think the Leafs were like a puck and a half favorite. So, we'll see. You never know what you're going to get. You know, everybody pumped up over the end of the night. It's the greatest game in the history of Austin Matthews, and the Leafs are on their way now, and blah, blah, blah. We'll see. Okay. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker casino player, Bodog is your number one source of online gambling entertainment, from their industry-leading odds, world-class sports book, to their fully loaded casino and race book. They've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. That is Bodog.
I will probably watch this game a little bit tonight. I'm going on a date, so.
Oh.
Yes.
With that one that you had coffee with?
Yes.
I shouldn't say that one.
That one.
Nice woman?
Very nice woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going on a date. And this is the... Pardon me?
What will that involve? Dinner, like?
Yeah, it's dinner. Like, so first it's coffee, then you have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll see. I've got to make...
Then you have pie.
Stop it. Come on. What? Come on now. Come on now. Where's Dan? What? How much... You know, what do I need to do to get Dan back on the show when I say, listen, I've got to get a... At 9, I've got to get going. By the way, he did send me a note, and there is something to this. He said... we were talking about CSI. What is it called? Law and Order Toronto.
Yes.
Talking about... and we think it could be Voldemort, who was abusive to his staff. But
yeah,
remember Jean Gomeshi with the rough sex. So that's where that angle would come from.
How is it? Is that any better? Oh, so basically, he's in that group.
Well, I mean, we're not 100. What I said to Dan in return was, but Jean Gomeshi was not reputedly abusive to his staff. I don't remember if that was part of it.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you know.
You know, that's valid, but it would still bother me if people were talking about Jean Gomeshi and got me sort of mixed up with him.
No, exactly.
That would be a problem.
But I appreciate Dan Duran coming through with, you know, some fact-checking. In the meantime.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hell of a big whine, the quintessential anchor man. His voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman, comes. As for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care. And his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from Dan Duran News Headquarters, where Lisa, his beautiful bride, is currently making some breakfast, probably some English muffins and a bit of jam, I'm guessing. Here he is, movie anchorman and television series star. He is, as you know, Daniel J. Gieber Duran III, with news and views. Sorry. Here
just
he is.
Just ended there. News and
with
views.
News and views.
Resolve. Yeah. Okay. When are you old? Not how old are you, but when are you old? Like, when does old age start? There's a new study that was published by the American Psychological Association figuring out what middle-aged and older adults believe that old age, or when old age begins. When do you think old age begins? Howard, when does it start?
Well, I have an anecdote from last night's Passover dinner with my ex-mother-in-law, who's 86. Two quick things. She just recently went on her second date with some dude. And, oh yeah, 86.
You're co-dating now, are you?
They went on a date. So I looked at her, I'm like, what? And then the second thing that made me laugh at dinner last night was she was talking about some friend of hers who was 87. She said, yeah, she's starting to look old. I said, fucking starting? What was she at 77? So that goes to your idea of the mindset of people. She literally said an 87-year-old. Yeah, she's starting to look a little old. Oh, is she? Fuck, I guess so. Dan, I think, I don't know the answer. The answer, when do I think people believe old age starts?
No, it's when you think it old
starts. When do I think it starts? 75.
Okay.
Yeah, I might say that. It's between the ears and it's what your body is saying to you. And
right. Well, that's been changing over the years.
You know, I don't know.
The study that they did is over a bunch of years. When participants who were born in 1911 and were asked when they were 65 years old, they said the beginning of old age was at 71.
Mm.
Participants that are born in 1956 said old age begins at 74 on average when they were 65 years old. So when you're like, so you have to be kind of around that older age, like retirement age, and then your perception of that, and it's been changing over the years.
Well, this is why I said 75, because I know a lot of people of, you know, your guys' age and into their early 70s that are still, you know, don't seem old to me. But my point about Barb, my ex-mother-in-law, to an 86-year-old, you know, who's just gone on her second date with some other 86-year-old. Like, I think that's part of the sad thing about aging is that inside your head, you still walk around thinking you're a fucking 28-year-old.
Well, I think, too, you know, it's your brain, but I think it's tied to, if you start having aches and pains and these chronic things, I think that can age you in your mind, right? I think as long as your body's functional, your mind can stay young because you can do things.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be an adventure over the next few years. Yes, it is. Because who knows what that is? I guess it's different for everybody, obviously. But when you actually have to make the decision that you can't do things because of your age, that's got to be tough.
She has a walker. And she was saying that what makes her sad is that she's the only one of her friends she's funny. She's the only one of her friends that has to use a walker. I said, well, what do your friends use? She goes, their feet. I thought it was very cute. I'm like, I get it. Yeah. See, so that's to your point about mobility being a big factor for how you feel. One of the well, I was gonna say one of the prime reasons she went out with this dude is that he can still drive a car. Like that was
priorities change. Yeah,
yeah, that another, was a big priority.
Another aspect of this is, you know, there was times in our lives when our buddies' grandparents died, and then the next phase, then people's parents started to die, and now when you have, you know, friends and colleagues that are dying, it's like, you know, that's not the best for your brain either, because you know, now I'm in that group that is dying. Not quite there yet, but I'm sure it will gain some big momentum in the next 10 years. And that's got to be tough to take, too.
Yeah, you know, I thought of that. You had two things have happened. There was a colleague of yours. I'm not sure Dan ever worked with him. A colleague of ours. I barely worked. Did I work with him?
With Jim Reed?
Yeah, JR.
I no, not at CFNY. You didn't. I know he went to the mix, but I don't think he was there when you were there. But you met him a couple of times.
Yeah, of
he came
I
into the
him.
Studio.
Yeah, great
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
And but you know that happened. He's a somewhat of a peer of yours, not a super close friend.
74.
Yeah,
somewhat older, but
yeah. But and then you know, and another beloved character at the trailer for years, and he passed away. And when you announced it to me after the show, to Dan and I, you said, well, end of an era. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy's 92 years old, but he represented, you know, a big chunk of your guys' life around that trailer for 30, you know, plus years.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was something. You know, the thing is about Doug, he wasn't that ill that long. We called him Papa Doug. You know, he had a lot of dignity. He was a guy, he was an executive, and he would tell stories about his working days and remember guys' names and their positions. It was fascinating, right up until this past summer. Somebody like that, you don't want them to lose their sort of dignity through illness at that age. And as much as everybody loved him, it's like, you know, he had a good run, and he didn't have to suffer that end of it, so to speak. He was up there like last summer, so
crazy, man.
Sad but sweet.
It's also right. Interesting. I was out at a birthday party dinner for an 89-year-old around here. It's a close friend of Lisa's. And we were just talking about, you know, age perception and stuff like that. And she had mentioned that she had to, she was at another party with a bunch of older people like her age, and she dreaded it because there's just a bunch of old people. She really enjoys hanging out with us, and you know, she has much of a she looks a lot younger than she is, and has a very young mind as well. And that's probably a big part of
aging.
Make sure you engage with younger generations and maintain relationships.
Well, it's like you working with us. You know, you're in your 90s and you're hanging out with us every day. It's got to be great for you.
Just one quick note on age and how time flies. Delisa's mom is going to be 90 on May 10th. When I started going with Delise, her mom was 38.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's not as much, but I started dating Barb's daughter when Barb was 50 years old. So, you know, I've known Barb for 36 years.
Yeah.
Freddie, we got to go. Dan, thank you for your service.
Gotta go.
Well, fuck. All right, let's just keep fucking talking.
No, that's fine. I'm just saying. Gotta go. That was the extra for today. Gotta go.
Yeah, okay, great extra.
Okay, great extra.
I gave you 9 extra minutes. I got shit to do.
This is an episode of Humble and Fred. Oh, I'm sorry. You're going to say you don't start the music and then talk.
Okay, sorry. I apologize. I apologize. I want to say tomorrow on the show, hopefully you'll join us for a reasonable conversation with somebody that's a huge supporter of the former president of the United States.
Okay, this episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. For contests and comments, we read all of our emails today. For example, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. That's humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. Tell us what you think. Subscribe. Tell your friends. You know, tell the world. We'd love it if we could get a few more listeners and juice up that algorithm a bit. for Humble and Fred from the Insert Your Name Here Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, just remember, so you can enjoy every goddamn day.
Fresh flow, pulling out jobs and jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone, bottles and cans, and just clap your hands, and just clap your hands. Where's that?